Our study tonight is out of Matthew chapter 6, verses 1 to 4. The biblically consistent righteousness of Christ's subjects regarding giving. Or in the immediate context, it's almsgiving, but we can relate that to giving in general. When Jesus said that one's righteousness had to exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees if he were to be part of the kingdom of heaven, in Matthew 5:20, he had to clarify to his Jewish listeners how that could possibly be. The Pharisees adhered to the principle of halakha, which is concerned for every jot and tittle of performance regarding the Mosaic law. Well, Matthew 5:21-7:6, what we know better as the Sermon on the Mount, provides many illustrations of Jesus' point. And Matthew 6:1-4 comments on how his kingdom righteousness on the subject of giving far surpassed that of the Pharisees. I want to read the passage, and then we'll look at it in depth. Matthew chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Take heed that you do not your alms before men to be seen of them. Otherwise you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Therefore, when you do your alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Truly I say unto you, they already have their reward. But when you do your alms, let not your left hand know what your right hand does, that your alms may be in secret, and your Father which sees in secret himself shall reward you openly. Okay, there are several phrases here, both in verse 3 and in verse 4, that relate to specific cultural practices and religious practices that were done in Jesus' day that aren't done in our day, and that actually helps to illuminate what he's talking about and to press home the impact of the message that he has for us. Where Matthew 5:21-48 focused on what the Pharisees taught due to what they believed, Matthew 6:1-18 focused on what they practiced as part of their religion, what they did outwardly as part of their religious beliefs. Now, the Pharisees were notoriously externalists. Their religion was that which was on the outside. They were noticeably minus on focusing on motives. Your motives could be pretty much all over the place, providing that your works were okay. And Jesus, of course, constantly critiqued that. Because they believed, the Pharisees did, that one's righteousness involved primarily how you related to other people, rather than a matter of a heart relationship with the Lord. But this errant view of righteousness left them open to hypocrisy in action, to where they impressed others with false, ungodly motives. Accordingly, Jesus began his critique of the Pharisees' external religiosity by warning his disciples not to practice their righteousness before men, to be seen by and so to impress men. For doing that left one with no reward from God, since the act was hypocritically external, not true or inward righteousness. Matthew chapter 6, verse 1, take heed that you do not your alms or your works before men to be seen of them. Otherwise you have no reward of your Father which is in heaven. Sadly, a lot of pastors are guilty of violating this passage. They live sometimes to be seen by others or to impress others by externally showing either with the giving or the attendance or the members that are joining the church or how many baptisms and so forth. It's false spirituality. God wants us to focus on our relationship with Him. He wants us to do what is pleasing to Him from the heart. Now, it'll show up in works, but it's always something that starts with the heart. Well, to illustrate this charge, Jesus alluded to the practice of almsgiving and critiqued the hypocritical way that Israel's Pharisees practiced it in verse 2. Opposite what the religious Pharisees did, Jesus directed his disciples not to try to attract public attention to what they were giving, as did these folk did in the synagogues and the streets where the beggars collected. Verse 2, therefore, when you do your alms, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets. Dr. John MacArthur, in his commentary, mentions that there's no evidence that they actually sounded a trumpet per se, but this was like they were heralding. They were doing everything they could to broadcast their giving. Now, we know this. I remember Dr. Dwight Pentecost, who was our pastor my wife and me when we were in Dallas, Texas. He said that in the giving boxes that they had in the temple, they had these huge brass cone trumpets that came up. And what you would do if you were a Pharisee, you would convert the money that you had to give into the smallest coinage possible so there'd be a lot of coins. And you take this huge bag of coins, and you would tip it and pour it down these trumpets. And of course, it would make a huge racket. And you did this in front of everybody, and everybody was impressed by all these coins that were going into this box. I remember one day there was a student at Stanford University and who decided to pay his tuition fees into the registrar's office. He converted it into coins, into pennies. I think it was a $15,000 for one semester, and he came in and just dumped $15,000 worth of pennies all over the registrar's office. Then they hurriedly made a rule within a day that you couldn't convert money into coins like that. It had to be in check form. But it was a mess. It was all over her desk, all over her floor. She couldn't do work or anything. Well, the Pharisees essentially did that. They converted it into small coinage so it would make a big wallop and big impression on other people around them. And so Jesus was critiquing this. That's a false spirituality. In fact, such donors seek the honor of onlooking humans rather than the honor of God. So the only reward they will gain in almsgiving is the reward of the human onlookers. In verse 2, where Jesus said, "Verily I say unto you, they have the reward. They want to be seen of men. They want to be gloried by men. They've got the reward. But as far as God's concerned, they don't have a reward. There's no reward for that. You already got it by focusing on yourself." Rather, Jesus directed that giving should not be done to impress human onlookers, but to gain God's approval as an act of the heart, where God alone receives the glory in the giving effort. Matthew chapter 6, verse 3, the expression of not letting one's hand, his left hand, know what his right hand does in giving was possibly a proverbial expression that simply referred to doing something spontaneously with no special effort to show. In a normal day's work, the right hand would do many things as a matter of course that would not involve the left hand. Giving to help those in need should be a normal activity of the Christian, and he should do it as simply, directly, and discreetly as is possible. In other words, it shouldn't necessarily mean that we're always hiding, but the implication is giving should be so spontaneous that it's like things, if you're a right-handed person, I happen to be left-handed, so it's hard for me to think of how many things to do with my right hand and do so much with my left. But there are a lot of things, if you're right-handed, that you do with your right hand through the course of the day that you don't even think about. Maybe it's brushing your teeth. I brush with my left hand because I'm left-handed, and so forth. Well, I don't bother telling my right hand what my left hand is doing. I don't even think about that. It just happens. You see a need, and you address it with your hands. Giving should be that way. See a need? I got the resources. You give. It's just not a big deal. It's just something that you do. It's as common as breathing. And that's exactly what Jesus said. It should be something that is a spontaneous reaction to a need that you see. Now, the implication is that Jesus also made reference to performing one's giving in secret. Now, in the latter part of that verse, verse 4, that your alms may be in secret, Dr. Ryrie, in his footnote in his Ryrie Study Bible, indicated that it may refer to the Jewish tradition that there was in the temple a chamber of secrets into which the devout used to put their gifts in secret so that the poor could receive support from therefrom in secret. The very devout knew that the poor were always embarrassed having to receive alms. They were embarrassed, and yet they needed the alms. So what the devout apparently did, this is just a tradition, we don't know this for a fact, there was a secret room in which they would put the money, and then the poor could go into that secret room and they could get the money so that nobody knew that they were receiving, and they wouldn't have to be humiliated by always being seen as someone who is receiving alms. This is a special thing, apparently, that the devout did out of consideration for the feelings of those who were needy. They did it in secret. And Jesus was condoning this, I believe, indirectly. He was indicating the giving should be something that is done in secret. This is why we have offering boxes. I know that, and publicly people will put their money in. I've seen in other churches where they pass an offering plate, people put money in. But we like the offering boxes. People are just led of the Lord and they go by. And sometimes I see people putting money in. It's always interesting. The checks are folded. That's the way it should be. Nobody knows. They wrote it out and they stuck it in. It could be $5. It could be $500. We don't know. It could be $5,000. I don't know. I don't know how that works. But anyway, it should be done in secret. Then one's giving should be spontaneous, simple, direct, discreet, and done not to attract human attention, but to address real needs in God's family and work as an act of personal worship before the Lord. Now, consequently, notice what Jesus taught. In the last part of verse 4, your Father who sees in secret, see, he sees the giver. He sees how much is written, and he sees the money. Your Father who sees in secret himself shall reward you openly. That's an amazing thing. Openly is how the God desires to give. So Jesus taught that such truly righteous giving would be openly rewarded before all men by God the Father himself. Now we know from a passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, 6 through 10, that this reward, at least in part, is financial. Because in that passage it teaches that if we give, God is not mocked. Whatsoever man sows, that shall he receive. And God provides him with reimbursement so that he is equipped in turn to give again. And I've noticed in my own life that there is a direct proportion to what I choose to give, and sometimes how sacrificially, and what God will do in response. He's very, very sharp on this. Of course, God is sharp. He's intelligent. He's infinitely brilliant. But he's right on top of this. He watches the motive. He watches the amount based upon what I can give versus what I do give. And his reimbursements are very, very precise and in accordance with that. So the lesson is true righteousness in giving is not giving with the intent of gaining approval from human onlookers in hypocrisy, but giving done with the intent of meeting real needs that other people face as an act of worship to God. This way, one exchanges the reward of mere human approval for God's approval. I really believe that God is keeping it a bank account in heaven. And all the money that a Christian gives when we stand before the judgment seat of Christ and how it's given under the conditions, all of that's going to be carefully recorded. Because the Bible says we're going to give an account for our works. And part of those works are giving. So God is not mocked. Whatsoever man sows, that shall he reap. So may we not give publicly for human glory, but may we give in secret to please God from the heart. After I had my car accident in 1990, we were without a car because our car was totaled in the accident. And there was a man in the church, I'm not going to give the man's name, who was burdened about the fact that we didn't have a car. And also, since I'd broken six ribs, I needed a car that was comfortable and smooth to ride in, because you get in a car and if you've had six broken ribs and it's rough, it hurts every time the car moves like that. So this man had a used Cadillac and he gave us the Cadillac, no money. He just signed it over to us because he was concerned that we would have something. It was an older car, that's true, and we drove it until there was a ceiling cloth that went over and the glue of it started coming down. It eventually came down. It was on our heads and we kept pinning it up. But eventually we got rid of the car and got something else and we had the money to do that. But I never forgot that. And it reminded me also of another situation. Just after World War II, my dad had decided to become a missionary, and he was up in a lumber town in Feather Falls, I think it was, in California. And there was an older man there. He had one car. It was a Model T. And he was concerned that my dad would have a vehicle to get around so he could get support to go to the mission field. So he signed over his Model T. Now, this is just after the war. This is the only car he had. His vehicle, he gave it to him. My dad was always deeply moved by that. And I think the man was Mr. Henning, I think his name was. He's now, of course, he's long gone with the Lord. The man was about ready to retire at the time, but he says, well, I really don't need it. I'm here, this is my home, but you need it, and you need it to serve the Lord. So he just gave it to him. Wasn't a big fanfare, he just signed it over. I don't know how many other people in the church even knew about it. All they knew is that he didn't have a car. But, of course, that Model T drove him all over the place. And then he got a 1947 Chevy and drove that. And in those days, you couldn't get replacement tires because it was just after the war and rubber was rationed. So it was quite a thing. But this type of giving is something that is incredibly pleasing to the Lord. And I encourage people to give heartily unto the Lord. And And since I happen to be, my salary happens to come through the giving of the church, I encourage people to increase their giving to the missionaries first. I try it with that and see what the Lord does with the missionaries, because that's 100% of that which is given to the missions goes to the missionaries. And see what the Lord does, and the Lord will really bless.